All right, Murph. Very appropriate. We've got the Haggerty Murphy St. Patrick's Day edition of the Great American Hockey Show podcast.
With the Irish music.
Slancha, Aaron Gobra, and all that good stuff.
The Great Irish Hockey Show for this week. That's how we'll put it. Irish American.
What's better than that? The Great Irish American Hockey Show podcast. Yeah. Let's start the music. Welcome in to the Great Irish American Hockey Show podcast. This is episode number 13. I'm Joe Haggerty, your Bruins insider for Comcast Sportsnet New England. I'm with my co-host James Murphy from Bruins Daily. And Murph, happy St. Patrick's Day to you. And
same to you, my friend.
What's on your mind this week, my friend?
Besides Jameson and Shamrocks.
Maybe a green bagel.
And a lot of Irish.
Go for one of those.
I'm gluten-free now, remember?
Oh, that's right.
That's why the Jameson instead of Guinness.
The struggle is real for the gluten.
It really is. You know, when the doctor says you can't drink Guinness, but you can drink Jameson, it's almost like he's pushing me to be worse in the alcohol department. But
yeah.
We digress.
Yes.
Anyhow, my friend, you know what's on my mind is that you're starting to feel – it's that time of year. You can feel the playoffs approaching. You can feel the play on the ice ramping up across the NHL. And specifically, I think it's fair to say, well, we'll get into it in a little, they do get their due credit that they have ramped their play up on the ice, and that's the Boston Bruins. They definitely have been a reinvigorated team since the trade deadline. Obviously, the management decides to go out, fill some holes, and now they know their team going forward, and they're happy with it, and it's showing with the way they play.
5-0-2 since the NHL trade deadline. They've tightened things up defensively. Tuukka Rask has been outstanding. I think it's a .940 save percentage, 5-on-5 since the trade deadline. They've continued to get really strong performances from guys like Louis Erickson, Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand. Even I've really liked, even though the mistakes have still been there, I've really liked some of the nastiness that Zdeno Chara has had in his game the last couple weeks. And you can tell he's starting to, you know, get that scent of the playoffs in his nose and that the late season, postseason games. And you've seen him at least once a game dropping somebody in the defensive zone with a huge hit, which he wasn't doing earlier in the year. And makes me wonder a little bit with him how much he was kind of conserving to get towards the end and, you know, what he's going to have in the tank and all that good stuff. But just in general, they're a better team since the trade deadline. They've plugged two holes that they really needed to plug. I do believe now, after watching this team, seeing them beat the Penguins, the Blackhawks, take the Capitals to overtime, sweep in Florida against Florida and Tampa Bay, beat the Islanders. I believe after watching these games and then previously seeing them not being able to beat a playoff team for 2 months, then maybe they will win a round in the playoffs. Maybe they will get to the second round. Maybe there will be, you know, at least a good, you know, 2 weeks to a month of playoff hockey in Boston come April and early May. And that might even be enough to whet the appetite of the angry Bruins masses from last year that didn't get their playoff hockey. But from before the deadline, I didn't think they were going to get out of the first round. I thought it was going to be a really quick series. I see enough now to believe maybe they could beat a Florida in the first round of the playoffs before it eventually comes to an end for them.
Joe, you know I love you, but I completely disagree.
Okay.
I think that if you look at those two Florida games, and I think this is something that you and I have given them credit for all season, well, this team has been very inconsistent.
Murph, you ignorant slut, I think you're completely wrong. No, go ahead.
Well, this team has been frustratingly inconsistent.
Yeah.
They have shown a lot of resilience, and I think that's a great sign, especially with the young part of this team going forward, that they have that in them already. That's a great sign for the future. That being said, without that resilience, they lose in Florida and they lose in Tampa 6-0, 7-0 maybe. They got completely outplayed in those games, Joe. If not for Tuukka Rask and Jonas Gustafsson, they don't come away with wins. It's that simple. Those goalies were the difference in both games. And it was almost like just the season in a capsule. It was just so misleading to me. I think it's great. Yeah, you went in there. You got the 4 points. And yes, that's what counts at this time of year. But going forward, and I think what we're going to see this week as they embark on this murderer's row of San Jose, Anaheim, and L.A.
Which is much different than the teams in Florida.
Exactly.
And, but they also wouldn't face these teams in the playoffs until they got to the Stanley Cup Final.
Well, that's a good point. But my fear for the Bruins is they won't face these Western teams, but what they will face are teams from the East that are playing not equal to those Western teams, because I don't think they ever can.
Right.
But pretty close, because I think the levels of all the pretenders are starting to go down and become pretenders, and the real teams are starting to rise above the crop right now. And I think you're seeing that with the likes of Tampa Bay. They face mm-hmm. Tampa Bay in the first round. They're gone.
Right.
I'm with you. I think they could beat Florida for the main reason, Joe, that they own Roberto Luongo.
Washington, Tampa, Rangers, first round gone for the Bruins. I think anybody outside of that, they've got a pretty decent chance of getting by. No, I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but I'm saying they've got a pretty good chance at any of those other series
yeah.
to advance, and it would be a competitive series, and they've got a decent chance to get by the first. I don't think anybody they face, and I don't think the Bruins are good enough to say, oh, that's a gimme, they're going to beat that team.
Exactly.
But I think they definitely wouldn't advance against a couple of teams. There's only two or three teams that I would say that about in the East. Other than that, you know, what you saw in that game, I didn't think they were outplayed in that Florida game. I just think they both teams weren't very good.
They were outshot 19-5 in the second period. Yeah. And what was it, like 11-6 in the third?
I don't think they were very good. I don't think the Florida – you know, what happened was they got a lead, and then they kind of went into protect
mode. And then that guy that they thought wasn't worth it anymore. Because fighting doesn't do anything in the NHL
right.
for all these PC people out
totally.
There. Yeah, I'm speaking to you. Sparked the Florida Panthers.
Which we saw the same thing in Dallas a week or two before
with Adam
when
McQuaid.
Adam McQuaid yeah. dropped the gloves and Dallas stopped
we
playing.
We could do a whole show on that,
Joe. I know. When Dallas stopped playing when they were up 3-1, and that's when things completely reversed. I thought it was the same kind of thing in Florida. But I saw enough flaws in Florida's game, especially early when they weren't ready to go in that.
I'm with you on Florida.
And Tampa, I wouldn't say that Tampa outplayed them. Tampa was firing from the perimeter and was taking easy shots.
Tampa kind of underestimated.
Bruins were very competitive in that game. And I
wouldn't Bishop
say
was huge,
Tampa
though.
Outclassed them.
Yeah.
By any means, but I still think they wouldn't beat Tampa in the first round. But there's about a 40 to 50% chance at this point when you look at the odds that they're going to play the Florida Panthers in the first round now. It looks like it's shaking out
that way.
And the
one good sign, I'm with you on the Panthers.
Young defense, Roberto Luongo has always struggled against the Bruins. I think you've got a lot of inexperienced players that will be in the playoffs for the first time for the Panthers. And I think we're seeing that now with them losing games and dropping
back.
And
another thing I think of while we speak too, Joe, about Florida is yes, they came back roaring back on the Bruins there, right? And you know, tilted the game there, but they couldn't finish them off. They had everything right there to finish the Bruins off. The momentum had shifted, and somehow they let the Bruins hang around a little too much, and the Bruins capitalized on that. So I'm with you on that. I think Florida, they definitely have a chance. Detroit, yes. But Detroit's another team. Detroit reminds me a lot of the Bruins. I can't figure them out. And I think
right.
one of the reasons they're kind of
very
an enigma right now is Mrazek has lost his game a bit lately. I won't say that in the last game, but overall in the last few weeks, he hasn't been the goalie that, you know, what was it, a month ago, they were talking about a Vezina trophy for him. He's not even close to that now. But, you know, it's going to be interesting. I'm with you, though. The likes of Tampa, the Rangers and Washington, forget about it. I just think there'll be a monumental upset for the Bruins to beat them.
Yeah, and I'm willing,
but that can happen.
I'm willing to give Don Sweeney and Cam Neely credit that, you know, while we were critical of them for thinking short term over long term at the trade deadline, and I think I might have underestimated a little bit how much of an impact Stempniak and Michael Lyles were going to have to fortifying the roster. Not only that, but also I think really lifting the spirits and the morale inside the room when they added to the team and kept Lou Eriksson rather than trading him away. And I think you saw some of the veterans play with a little more renewed energy and spirit when that happened, because they got a message from management and ownership that they believe in the team right now and maybe they can make a little bit of a run for it. So I'm willing to give them a little more credit than I did before, that they did a better job as far as addressing the needs and identifying what was wrong with this team and plugging those holes, while at the same time still being short-sighted as far as, you know, building towards the future and not doing what's best long-term for the franchise.
Exactly.
What do you think?
I don't know where to start here.
Well,
let me put it this way. Let's go back to when they fired Peter Chiarelli.
Yep.
All right. And Cam Neely said that he didn't want to allow Peter to trade away the future for the now. and trade away the future just to kind of secure holes for now and just to get to the playoffs. What did they just do?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's exactly what they did.
He contradicted everything. Now
they didn't trade a first-round pick, though.
Now.
And that was the one thing they didn't want him to trade last year with a first-round pick.
That's fine.
They did trade two
Why
would
they trade a first-round pick, though, when they could get one for Erickson?
Right.
Here's what I'm going to say, and he's vehemently denied this straight to my face, as many in the media know. We won't get into that, but I don't believe it for one bit. I think ownership stepped in, and I refuse to believe that they didn't play a role in the approach to the deadline, because I think, and I am all on board with Don Sweeney. I don't agree with everything he's done, but he's, until the trade deadline, he had stuck to his mandate. He had done whatever. He didn't care what anyone else said. He had done what he promised to do. And then all of a sudden, it flips, and it's more focused on the now. It's more focused on, you say they filled holes. You say they addressed needs. They addressed short-term needs.
Sure.
They addressed small needs. Mm-hmm. Their bigger need, which I think they still could have accomplished and still made the playoffs, was not addressed, and that was getting a top-four defenseman. And I'm sorry. I can't understand with the position they were in how they were not able to address that and do it, or at least set themselves up to do it at the draft. I think they failed in a big way there. I think they became too short-sighted. And, you know, it's funny. I had this discussion with a local bar owner. I won't say the name or the bar or the owner. I don't want to get him in trouble.
Fine.
Okay? But he said, look, I can't knock Cam Neely and Don Sweeney right now because they're running the team exactly as I got to run my bar. They're running in the now. Who cares about the future? They're going to get that immediate money from the first, maybe the second round, and they get that money they need and that they lost out on last year, and that's all that seemed to matter to them. And that's great for my bar right now because that means more games, more patrons that I wouldn't have that I didn't have last spring. But guess what? This is an NHL team, not a pub across from TD Garden. And I think they failed in that in a big way.
Yeah, but it's still a business, Murph. And it's still they're still in the operation of making money. And
for that, I commend them.
Right. For that reason, I can't be hypercritical of them because they're running it like a business and getting into the playoffs.
Stan Bowman runs things like a business.
Yeah, but there's only one Blackhawks. I mean, they also have Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and, a small nucleus of players that have won multiple cups. The Bruins don't have that.
And how they do that?
They don't have Kane and Toews. Well, you start by drafting Kane and Toews. That's where it starts.
Okay.
But I think
the Bruins drafted Tyler Seguin.
Put it this way.
Yeah, what they do with that, though.
That's one player. And yeah, I don't know. Who are you comparing Seguin to, Kane or Toews?
I think he's going to eventually be in
there. Yeah, eventually,
league.
Maybe. Yeah. He's going to have to perform in the playoffs before I'm willing to go there with either one of those players. I just don't to base anything off, this is what the Blackhawks do, is flawed because there aren't a Kane and Toews on every single team in the league. When you start off from
there's
that
not
point
a Kane and Toews on the LA Kings, and they've done exactly what the Blackhawks have done in the last 5 years.
Yeah, but they also had to miss the playoffs last year, which was a step back to go forward again, like what the Bruins are doing. We'll see what they do in the playoffs. But my point is, I think that they, obviously, they're running it like a business. I wouldn't undersell, Murph, just the ego involved with, we're going to get back into the playoffs in my first year running with both Don Sweeney and Cam Neely. And I think there's an element of that where this is what we show to the fan base and the season ticket holders and to ownership and to everybody else, that we were able to bring this team back to where they needed to be. I think they made some moves that short-circuited the long-term, no doubt about it. I still think they could have traded.
But don't you think the fan base would have accepted another non-playoffs? There was a feeling around here that the fans are almost understanding.
No.
Okay,
no.
You're building for the future. We'll swallow another year in non-playoffs.
This is what they could have bought. You trade Louis Erickson, you bring up Frank Vetrano, you don't get that much of a drop-off offensively.
You still might make the playoffs.
You put yourself in a good enough position playoff-wise at the trade deadline that you still make the playoffs anyway. Yes, you're an easy first-round exit. You're not going to have a long
run. And
we're
fine with that.
But you could get the best of both worlds. And that's where the train goes off in the tracks. And I felt
Thank
like they
you.
Should
okay,
have
then we both
done
agree
something
on
differently.
That.
But my whole point is, I was very hard on Neely and Sweeney when and undersold the difference that the new players would make to the team. And they've been pretty good.
You're exactly right.
Better than I thought they were going to be. I'm glad we're on the same page
with
that
one.
We're on
the same page there.
All right, let's move on to the interview with Josh Cooper. And we welcome in our buddy Josh Cooper to the show, the Great American Hockey Show podcast. Josh covered the Nashville Predators for 4 years for the Tennessean. He's been a puck daddy with Yahoo Sports the last couple of years, pretty much writing about everything across the league and doing an outstanding job of it. Josh, how you doing today, bud?
Good, and please, guys, no spoilers on the Bachelor finale. Couldn't watch it last night from the GM's meetings here in Florida.
Don't worry, you're not getting any from us.
You will get no spoilers from me. In fact, yeah. I sent out one of the rare hags gifts on Twitter last night mocking people that were tweeting about the Bachelor. So,
very nice.
We are the anti-Bachelor crowd, although I do know there's a lot, a surprisingly large number of NHL players that are addicted to that show, that tweet about it, that get together in groups and watch it. I mean, you must have done a story on that at some point.
No, but I think it was about a year ago I wrote this piece. Like, I think it was like the 7 or 8 hockey players who would be the best on The Bachelor, and I'm pretty sure I had Michael Delzato number one.
Really? You know what? That's a good call. I think Lisa Ann might disagree, but...
Well, I did note that, and I think I did have Phil Kessel on there too, which I thought which would be amazing.
It would be car crash awkward television to the nth degree. You know who would actually, and I don't know if he was on your list or not, but you know who would be the absolute best, The Bachelor?
Tyler Sagan?
No, well, he'd be good, obviously.
He would get thrown off
for all the obvious reasons, but yeah, he would be. He would have like 10 girls beating the crap out of
he
each
would be
other
on
fighting
the pornographic version
at the very end. No, you know who would be the best would be the Jager.
Oh, gosh.
Wouldn't he be a phenomenal guy for the Jager? Jaromir Jagr.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
How good would he be as The Bachelor? Just the personality, you know, to see the inner workings of how he would, like, romance and woo women. And just the fact that he just does not give a crap about
any
of it.
And he would take selfies for us, too.
Yeah.
In bed.
If they don't like Jagr peanut butter, they do not get the rose.
Very good, very good. So, yeah, spoiler-free Bachelor here. You're at the GM meetings right now. Just give us a rundown on, you know, what you learned today, what you've sort of the vibe down there, and what's been dropping for the GM meetings.
Well, I learned that Kay Whitmore is an incredibly eloquent man when talking about goaltender equipment. And really, I mean, that's sort of the crux of today, was that they're going to make the goaltender equipment more streamlined, I think was the quote, for next year. And all the GMs, and you hear them talking about offense all the time and how to sort of make offense better in the game. I think what it boils down to with them is just making the goaltender equipment smaller. And if that doesn't work, then you come up with some other ideas. But I think that's where they're at right now. And I think that PA is on board with this finally. I think that you're going to see smaller equipment next year, just only because I think – some of the better goaltenders are realizing, okay, you know, the guys who maybe aren't as skilled as us are getting jobs in this league and challenging us because technologically their pads are better than ours. It's just kind of messed up. So they want this. A lot of the goalies who have been involved in it, guys like Corey Schneider, for example, are some of the elite goaltenders. And I think that's sort of the big takeaway from today, is that there was some talk about Rule 48, the headshot rule. Overall, I think the GMs, with the exception of Jarmo Kekalainen, are pretty satisfied with that. And no talk yet about the expansion draft or anything else along those lines. And it was funny, yesterday they ended really early, probably about 10:30 in the morning. Today they went till about 1 p.m. And it was just, I don't think there's a ton to talk about right now, just because the game is in such a good state. And a lot of things, at least in my mind, are kind of nitpicky to some degree. Maybe that's the wrong term. Maybe it's more kind of the minutia of the game that needs to be addressed.
I'm surprised, Coop, that there aren't more virulent, vocal enemies of the coaches' challenge and the replay, and you know, GMs that either want to have it seriously examined or want to maybe even, you know, reverse it completely and go back to where they were before, given some of the inconsistencies that we've seen this year. And I'm interested to see where the blue line cameras, how that impacts the offsides calls, and whether that really addresses that and makes that better than it's been, where I think there's been too much gray area for something that should be black and white. And, you know, also I'm just concerned about refs blowing plays dead because they don't want to get second guessed and they don't want to get challenged and sort of killing, you know, what could be scoring plays and great offensive plays and stuff like that. Just a lot of the fallout that you hear pretty normally about the coach's challenge. But I'm surprised that there's not a big phalanx of GMs that want to get rid of it.
You know, but I think the big thing with that was they see this as not a perfect system. And while they're going to make some tweaks to it, I think that they still see it as getting more plays right that were in the past gotten wrong. And I mean, look, there are definitely some issues with the system. I mean, I think that the tablet size, while everyone seems to indicate, is really not a huge deal, only because it was actually once explained to me that when you're looking at a tablet size from the distance that the refs are looking at it as, it's almost like you're sitting at home watching an HDTV from a sheer how you're looking at it, where it is versus your eyeball. So I thought that was kind of fascinating. But it still looks really bad, especially if you're determining the outcome of a big play and potentially a big game on a tiny tablet. It just looks awful. And
well,
I think
there's also the fact that, like, these refs are skating around. They're, you know, adrenaline is flowing. They're in the middle of a hockey game. And then it would be like if you were outside and running 5 miles or playing full court basketball, and then all of a sudden somebody pulled you off to the side to look at this tiny tablet to make a ruling on something while all that was going on. I'm of the opinion, and I always have been since it started, that it should just get thrown to Toronto and the situation room where they're looking at huge screens. They're sitting there. That's what they're doing the entire time. And I know, you know, there's some toe-stepping with the refs, and there's some sensitivity to, you know, leaving the human element into the game. But I think as long as the refs are being put in a situation where on the ice they've got to overrule their own calls, there's going to be some flaws there.
Yeah, but also I think the ref doesn't want, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, I don't think the ref wants to feel like they have someone looking over their shoulder all the time.
Right.
And there is a reason, and it seems like in every sport, why it's the call on the field or the call on the ice or the call on the court always, in a 50-50 situation, is the one that it always goes to and always breaks to. So I think that they want to keep the referee involved. We asked them about Toronto and potentially just having them be involved only in the coaches' challenges, and that was a non-starter. So I think when you just kind of look at the whole thing, I think this is how the GMs are looking at it, is that they feel like they've gotten rid of the, and I think I heard this word a million times yesterday, the egregious calls, the ones that really do the really bad calls on offsides or goaltender interference. And just as long as they get rid of those, I think they can stand with the system not being 100% perfect this year and trying to make it better for next year.
Let me ask you, both you guys, this too, though. You know, I'm sitting here thinking that this is great that they want to give it a little more leeway and give it some more chance to develop and see how it goes. But what happens when, you know, we're in the conference finals, game 7, and a guy scores a goal in double overtime, and it's determined on one of these calls, and a team goes home, or a team doesn't score and then loses later? Are they going to have the same reaction then? Because the way I look at it right now, guys, this is all, I love that they're down there discussing it. I understand the GM's takes. I respect their views, but at the same time, they're not the coaches and the players down on the ice. They're not the one, and that's why I think we've heard the coaches be so vocal as opposed to the GMs. It's a different perspective. Yes, they're all on the same team, but at the same time, they're not the ones dealing with it one-on-one so much. And when it gets to the playoffs and it's really exaggerated, so to speak, I think we're going to get a different take. Do you?
It's going to be – the tempers are going to be higher and the emotions are going to be higher in the playoffs. And I think that's when you're probably going to see evolution of this rule take a new step when
exactly.
They hit that point.
Yep.
And I mean, right now I think they're just looking at how it's been in the regular season. And for the playoffs, you'll probably get a totally different animal, which I think is partially why they're instituting the blue line cameras for the playoffs, is so that you can have fewer questionable, at very least, offsides calls. But, I mean, I can definitely see a goaltender interference question come into play, you know, in a big goal and everyone's driving the net, and then you're basically, you could have the game-winning goal in triple overtime when everyone's crashing the net, have to go to a challenge. And that's a tough call. It's going to be a really difficult situation.
Yeah, it will. And I'll give you a perfect example of the kind of thing where it would backfire on the league, and it would, you know, be a much talked about failure of the system is like game. I was down in Florida, Bruins Panthers game last week, and goal was it was I believe it was called a no goal on the ice, or no, it was called a goal on the ice. It was Jaromir Jagr had a stick wedged between two Karask's leg pads and was prying his leg pads open when the puck went through. And it was like a subtle thing with the pads and the stick that you couldn't maybe catch it on when you're looking at that smaller screen. And it was a subtle enough movement that you couldn't see it. But when you saw it on a bigger screen, you really pulled back and watched it slowly. You could see something like that. Yep. And they supported it and made it a good goal. Even though Tuukka Rask was clearly interfered with there. And if something like that happens in the playoffs, I think you're going to have all kinds of upheaval and people arguing that this doesn't work and it needs to, you know, be overhauled and fixed. And the other thing is, in that same exact game, and this was almost a poster child for, you know, why the replay isn't quite working like they thought it was going to, there were two coaches' challenges and a video review of a goal in the first period. The first period of that game took an hour to play.
Yeah, that was a long
it
game.
It took over 3 hours to play the game. Yeah. The first time something like that happens in the playoffs, people are going to be calling for like time limits on the challenges.
Especially when it's on national TV. Yeah. Good stuff.
I think in the playoffs, there are definitely going to be instances where stuff's going to happen that they're going to have to fine-tune.
Let's just hope we don't have a Brett Hull toe in the crease. Yeah.
Well, and there's going to be, like, you know, a Josh Cooper, Greg Wyshynski fiery post on Puck Daddy just crushing the league for it, I'm sure. So that's when you'll see the NHL start to move on this, right, Coop?
Oh, yeah, and you'll see plenty of them coming out of this GM's meeting.
Yeah.
And all this stuff, I'm sure.
Coop, one thing we're hearing, you know, is that, and I think you touched on it earlier, there hasn't been much talk about expansion at all. And I'm wondering, this is just speculation on my part, if there is a lot of talk, but there's a gag order on this right now, and that, you know, with all this momentum towards Quebec maybe not getting a team now, and the Canadian dollar struggling and all that coming into play, Bill Daly having to come out and make a comment last week to kind of quell things down and kind of silence everybody. I'm wondering if there's just specifically a gag order on this right now, and they've been ordered to say, look, no matter what we say in here, it doesn't get out. And if there is a lot of talk going on that we just don't know about.
Not quite sure where that is. I mean, I think that it's been mostly just kind of chatter up in Quebec City and waiting and wondering. I mean, look, the executive committee, from our understanding, is that they haven't given their thought process on expansion yet. So it's overall just they're still deliberating. And if anything, I mean, time may be running out of expansion for the 2017-18 season, which is when the league said was the earliest they could do it. But to me, again, it still kind of seems that Las Vegas makes a lot of sense. Quebec City doesn't. And I think a lot of others are kind of, it's looked that way like a while for me.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of others are kind of seeing that as well. And it's kind of reading the tea leaves, but until we get the final word, we won't know. And I think that's sort of where everything is right now.
Well, it was interesting too, quickly, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Hags.
That's okay.
It's interesting. Mulroney, you know, the former prime minister is involved now with Quebec up there. He came out this week. I think Damian Cox touched on it in Hockey Headlines on Hockey Night in Canada there Saturday, saying he basically said there's going to be a longer wait. Like, we will get hockey, but it's not going to be as soon as we expected. So it's almost like you just said, people are really starting to accept the fact that, yeah, there could be hockey in Quebec's future, but they're not going to be in this first wave. And like you said, it looks more and more like Vegas. And whether they say it more, you know, they'll say it till the cows come home, that Seattle's decision doesn't have anything to do with it. But I think it does, because if they can't do Quebec, I don't think they can come in with one team. So they're waiting to see if Seattle can come through.
Well, I just I just don't think they can do a Canadian team right now.
They can't.
The Canadian dollar. They just can't do it.
They can't.
No.
You know, it's so ironic that that's why they lost their team. And right as they're about to get a team, the Canadian dollar goes down again.
Yeah, and they have that beautiful state-of-the-art facility going on, which is an absolute damn shame. Coop, Bruins are on the West Coast, California. What can they expect here from what you've seen lately, being out there and covering those teams, Sharks, Kings, and Ducks? People are looking at this as a real prove-it ground for the Bruins based on how well those teams have been playing the last few months.
Can I be like Clever Lang and say pain?
Yeah, yes, you can.
Need that soundbite.
I'll tell you, man, these teams, they all, I mean, I guess the exception of the Kings right now, just because they moved Jeff Carter to the first line, they all go three centers deep. Ugh. They're all big. They're all strong. They all rub you out. I mean, you guys know Milan Lucic as well as anyone. He's playing some incredibly inspired hockey of late.
Yep.
That Kings first line has just been dominant. The Sharks go three centers deep. The Ducks have been one of the hottest teams in hockey. It's going to be a challenge. I mean, last year was a bit of a down year for California. It's become an absolute gauntlet again this year. And that Pacific Division playoffs are going to be impossible. Just because, I feel bad for those teams just because one of them have to lose.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I think all three get Stanley Cup potential.
Yeah, and it's going to be a war in that Western Conference bracket just in general, and it has been the last few years, and I think it's going to be the exact same thing. And, you know, 3 out of 6 points I think would be great and would be a success for the Bruins if they can come back with that, and they'd be extremely happy for it. We'll give you the one last question and then let you go, Coop. Just from the outside sort of looking in, and, you know, we talk about this West Coast trip as being a big deal to the Bruins, and, you know, they finally in first place, second in the conference, and they're really starting to show something since the trade deadline. What's the view from the outside, from where you sit, of the Bruins and having watched them all year?
I don't see them as a contender. But I see them as having done better than what I expected. After the draft last year, I thought they wouldn't make the playoffs, and I thought Don Sweeney looked like like he was doing a really bad job. And really, they haven't been that bad. And I think part of it's just a tribute to Patrice Bergeron just being an amazing hockey player. And they have a really good goaltender. And, I mean, they just have some good players, but I don't see them as having the depth to contend, at least not this year. I really don't.
No.
But they're a good team, and they've definitely overachieved. And I think that there's definitely some promise in that.
Yeah, and it's a credit to the coaching staff and the veteran guys in that room for sure. But I think you're absolutely right. The defense is the Achilles heel of this team, and it'll be exploited by a good team. Maybe not in the first round. Maybe it might take a good team in the second round. But I think that's when the rubber will meet the road for the Bruins. Coop, we thank you very much for the time and chatting with us about all things around the NHL, bud.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Murph, thanks to Josh Cooper for some thoughts on the GM meetings, the West Coast teams, and, of course, the NHL and The Bachelor. That was just fantastic stuff.
Great stuff.
Let's get on to the Twitter questions, our interactive portion of the hockey podcast. From James, at Sun2Skis, question number one, of our pending free agents and RFAs, who stays and who goes this season? And number two, because of cap, could Spooner replace Krejci?
Yes.
Yes to both?
Yep. Yes to both.
I don't know about the Spooner replacing Krejci. I don't think Krejci's going to wave his no move to go anywhere.
Well,
I'm
just saying hypothetically speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, all right, and number one, pending free agents and RFAs, who stays and who goes. I mean, I think that Kevin Miller's not coming back. Because he's going to be too expensive at that point for what he brings. I mean, he's great right now as a value player that's got a low cap hit and can give them a lot. But I think a guy like Brandon Carlo might come in as a young defenseman and replace him on an entry-level mm-hmm. deal. I think something like that is very believable. You know, I think Stempniak could be back. And I think that it may play into what they gave – the second-round pick that they gave up for him and the investment they put in him and how well he's been with Bergeron and Marchand and how much Dylan Sweeney was criticized for not signing him when he could have for nothing in the fall. I would fully expect that there's going to be an extension there and that he's going to come
back. That's coming, for sure.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I mean, I know people that are pretty tight with Stempniak, and he's already expressed to Bruins management how much he would love to stay around here. Obviously, he's got a residence here.
Yep.
You know, as far as I'd have to agree with you on that. And I find something interesting, Joe, before we move on to the next question, just quickly, I wanted to get your take on it. Is it me, or when Kevin Miller went down with the injury, did the masses, media and fans alike, start to appreciate him a lot more?
Yeah.
It was interesting, right?
Yeah.
No, he's been the whipping boy all along. I mean, when I was growing up, he reminded me of what Glenn Wesley became after he missed that empty net in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah.
I mean, he was getting abused by the media and fans.
Or Hal Gill. Or Dennis Weidman.
Exactly.
Or any number of defensemen that have gotten
torched. He had become that guy for the Bruins. And then all of a sudden, not just media who, you know, tend to look a little past just the mistakes and look at the big picture, but everyone was starting to appreciate him more. And then I hear you just say right now, you know, he's going to get a little too much value on the open market. It won't. It's just interesting how the views of Kevin Miller are starting to switch there.
Yeah, and I think they missed him big time in that Florida game.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
There is some value to Kevin Miller.
Yeah, and there is, but I think part of the value
not enough
right now
though,
is the cap value. You know, when he comes back after playing the minutes that he has.
And I'm with you on Carlo.
I think he's going to
make
a lot more
money. I know Sweeney's really
money.
High on him, so yeah. I could see that happening for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think that Brett Conley will come back with this team either.
Who?
Yeah. Well, look, they've got Frank Vetrano. They've got Zach Sinishin, who's coming in, who I think they're very high on and think he might even compete for a job next year. They've got some young wingers that are going to be able to come in.
Coming up the pike.
And he's an RFA that is going to cost a little bit more money. So I'd be very surprised if he comes back too. And, you know, they gave it a whirl for a year. They gave him a long opportunity in a great spot up in the top six. Wasn't able to seize it and grab hold of it. And, you know, maybe he needs to go to a third team somewhere else to continue to get those chances to either establish himself or, you know, prove that he can't make it as a top six forward in the NHL.
Yeah.
Gustafson's an interesting one. He did a really good job this year. And you wonder if they will be willing to spend a little bit more money to keep a veteran guy like that who's a good fit as the backup.
And does Subban need more time now since the injury he had and he suffered? He lost a lot of games. So.
Yeah.
It could be interesting to see if maybe they think he needs a little more mentoring down at the AHL level. So
yeah, or he gets moved in the off season in that deal when they're trying to get a young defenseman.
Defenseman, yep.
All right. Let's see. Andrew. Let's go.
Nope, Andrew, you didn't make it.
Yeah,
sorry.
You know, I answered Andrew's question in the mailbag. So, you know what? Let's give you this one, Murph. Barry, which is at Licious Lounge, whatever the hell that is. Why does Claude have a quick trigger when benching younger players but allows Chara to make mistake after mistake?
Well, I think we both agree on this one, Joe, because he's Zdeno Chara. And I think Zdeno Chara, like it or not, I mean, he's earned the right to hold some weight, you know, in his opinion, whether he should be out there or not. And I think that plays a role. You and I have said this to each other many times that, you know, why is he still out there? Well, it's because they don't want to maybe necessarily deal with the backlash of not having him out there and the bad publicity that could cause and also souring the feelings of Char and losing him mentally. If you start to decrease his minutes or you start to maybe show, hey, you can't be making these mistakes. It's a very tricky situation, I think, for Claude Julien. I think there's many times where maybe he doesn't want to do what this person is complaining about right now, and he wants to give the young person more minutes because Zdeno Chara needs rest. He's getting old, and there's nothing wrong with that. He's still, I think, on a contender, he's still a great number three or four, but he cannot be the number one guy that the Bruins need him to be. And it's just fact right now, and I'm not knocking Char. I think he can still contribute. You said it earlier in the show. He's picked up his game as of late, and maybe that's it. Maybe he purposely paced himself. We'll see. But I'm with this tweeter right now. I think that, you know, I think that's a great question, and it needs to be solved soon.
Well, and they're still, even though he's picked up his play physically and he's, you know, playing with a little more surliness, he's still making mistakes.
Right.
And there are still times against other teams' best offensive players that he's being exploited. There's no question about that. And I think that's going to continue to happen because he's one of the oldest players in
plays.
The league now. Yeah, and he's also making bad decisions, whether it's pinching, whether it's bad decisions with the puck. You're seeing all that stuff.
You know, you credited the moves that Sweeney made, and one of them is Lyles, and that's worked out well. And why has it worked out well? Watch the way he makes that breakout pass. Watch the way that he handles the puck in his own zone.
Well, and that's what Chara should be playing with, is a puck mover like that. And he has been, for the most part, the last few games, which I think has helped him a little bit, too.
Exactly.
And part of the issue, I think, was that he was with Kevin Miller, Zach Trotman, you know, guys that aren't really adept at moving the puck. And to put him
– And that goes back to what I'm saying.
Like,
I'm not blaming Chara fully, but it's just a matter of the situation.
But there's also no doubt about any good hockey coach, and Claude Julien is among them, that there are certain guys that you have to have in the dressing room and that you have to have their support to keep it together,
exactly.
To keep guys playing hard for you, to keep things from going sideways as far as morale and just, you know, even mutiny, any of that stuff, or quitting on a coach or tuning out a coach. There are certain players you have to have on your side, and I think Chara is one of the key ones that's always been there for Claude Julien. and will continue to be as long as this is what's happening. I think it's just, you know, the hand that Claude's been dealt and the way that he's played at this point.
And like you said, the hand that Chara's been dealt with partners.
But I don't think he can, you know, he can't scratch Zdeno Chara. I think it's a huge statement if you're going to scratch the captain at some point. And that's been the end for GMs, for players, for, you know, in a lot of different instances with different organizations. Ask Patrick Roy.
Yeah.
You know, there are times when you can't do that stuff. And I just – it's not there yet. Plus, they're not a better team by either sitting Zdeno Chara or by playing him less minutes. They have to have him play because he's still their number one guy. They don't have somebody that can step in and replace him. And it's just they're going to have to do the best that they can with him right now.
Yeah.
But, you know,
You have seen for stretches, though, where he does decrease the minutes. I mean, there's been some games recently where Torrey Krug is logging more minutes.
But he's still over 20.
Yeah.
He's still always over 20. All right, quick one. Connor Floyd, 21. After seeing them in action, were Stepniak and Lyles worth the price?
I think we've established that. The price, I don't know. But did it do the job for now? Yes. If we're speaking in the present, yes. It did what they needed to do. They filled the holes they needed to fill in the current situation you're in. Overall, I don't think it should have been the focus, but we've addressed that. It did the job.
Yeah, I'm okay with the price for Lyles, a third, a fifth, and Anthony Kamara, who I'm pretty sure is not going to really make it in the league and not amount to anything. For Stepniak, a second
tricky,
and a fourth.
Because you could have had him.
It's okay, I think, if they sign him and he becomes a productive player for the next few years. I'm much more okay with giving up what he gave up if it turns into that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like giving up something for Mark Recchi and then having him turn into what he turned into. You're okay with whatever you gave up for him based on what he did.
Correct.
Once he got here and moving forward. But it still kills me that Don Sweeney could have had him for $850,000 by simply offering him a one-year veteran minimum contract back in September when he was playing with your guys in practice, when he, you know, worked out with Bergeron over the summer, when he was clearly comfortable with everybody that's going to be on your team. And just by watching him, I could tell he still had plenty left in the tank and that he was going to be a good player for somebody.
Yeah.
You know, though, if you're going to be a good –
I don't know, Joe. Maybe you should show up once in a while and ask Stepniak about that.
You know, like Fred Tucher. If you're going to be a good GM, you can't just throw up your hands and say, oh, the other 30 teams in the league didn't see it, so why'd you blame me? The good GMs will see that value, will sign that player, and will bring him in for nothing rather than giving up the draft
the
picks
good
at the
pro
deadline.
Scouts.
So, well, the whole deal. But, I mean, he was there watching captain's practices. It's not like he wasn't there.
Yeah.
All right, Murph, the St. Patrick's Day edition of the Irish American Hockey Show is in the books. Quick yay or nay, thumbs up or thumbs down on those Bruins green Irish jerseys with the plaid sleeves and stuff.
Yay. Yeah. I love them.
Dude, I
they had a Don Cherry flavor to them with the plaid, too.
Genetically incapable of giving thumbs down on anything with a shamrock and plaid and green. Screw all those haters out there that are mocking the St. Patrick's Day.
I love them.
That's it. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody.
Sláinte.
And remember, always keep it great, always keep it Irish-American, and always keep it about hockey. If you want to hear more Comcast SportsNet podcasts or learn how to subscribe to our iTunes feed, head over to csnne.com/podcast.